Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
Welcome to the Warmaster Podcast, episode 148 with Paul and Barry.
Hello, listeners.
Back to just Paul and Barry.
Yeah, don't pay your subscription fee anymore.
That's it. Although there's been a few new fellas kicking around in the old world of Warmaster. It seems to have had a bit of a resurgence.
Which is cool, yeah. Excellent, isn't it? Yeah. There's certainly room for more players, isn't it? We're not inundated.
Oh, that's certainly true. The more the merrier. I mean, yeah. you need a critical mass of any game to actually get games. So,
yeah, exactly.
Some of the far-flung communities of the world. So,
yeah.
The merrier. So, anybody that's new to the podcast, hello, I'm Barry, he's Paul.
Yep.
And this is the Warmaster podcast that talks only occasionally about Warmaster, really.
That's not through my fault.
No, I mean, we do talk about Warmaster, but today we're talking about Warmaster, but a little bit different.
Well, yeah, but you would say the title is Warmaster, The Next Generations. I mean, I didn't know you were really a Star Trek fan, to be honest, Barry. But,
there is only that. That is the only Star Trek, really, apart from the original. All the rest is just garbage.
Yeah. Well, I'll agree with you on that.
Deep Space Nine was all right for a bit, but come on.
Yeah. So it's Warmaster inspired games like that's how we'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, not just inspired. I mean, and also they get to see Paul paint, I don't know how they cope. They go week to week to week, and then we finally come back, and then they get to see you paint.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
what are you painting?
So I am painting epic.
Sci-fi Warmaster, as I like to call it.
My next club game is going to be a game of Epic Armageddon against George.
Gorgeous George.
And tired of never actually winning a competitive game with Space Marines, I'm going to take Imperial Guard. So I'm painting...
And Stomp a Noob, who's no doubt playing Space...
Eldar.
Yeah, they're tricksy.
They are good. But it'll be so there we go. Because at some point I would, and there has been an epic tournament since post lockdown. So I would like to play in an epic tournament again. Okay. And plus, this stuff is so easy to paint. I mean, haven't you done some epic stuff? Didn't you like?
But literally, I was doing some Blood Angels armor. It was literally like 5 minutes per tank. Yeah. It was literally no time.
Yeah, because you can spend more time on these ones, but I'm painting these Imperial Guard in Mechanic and Standard Grey. So literally that's like the spray paint. Then you pick out the metals, you ink it, and you pick out the details, and that's it done. And you get a nice look because what I've got in my hands here is some more recent sculpts from Independence. They're nicely cast little models. And the infantry especially, like the tanks are tanks. They'll look Unitarian no matter what you do. But the infantry I've gotten hold of are far better than the 80s original plastics, because that was done in the 80s. I've actually got some guys with like little proper details on them, so that'll be fun to do. But the majority of the army is vehicles, and they are super simple to paint. If you're going to go with I'm going for a Unitarian gray look because they're guard. It's like I thought about doing them green, but I was like, actually I've got gray spray that looked quite good before when I did an army for them before, so yeah, just doing what I know.
Bosh it out.
Exactly.
Guinness tonight. It's a bit touristy in it, but it's all right.
I'm drinking Punk IPA.
Oh yeah, so trendy. It's so up to date.
It's nice. Yeah.
This reminds me a little bit of the stuff we drank in Bruno, which is kind of like a stout, wasn't it? It was like a sweet stout.
Yeah.
That good stuff. I couldn't drink enough of that.
But Guinness never tastes as... Have you ever had Guinness from in Ireland? And I'll drink a pint of Guinness, but I wouldn't want more than one pint. But and they say like, oh, Guinness in Ireland it tastes differently. So I have, and yeah, it was like, it is a, it's like Guinness without the poor aftertaste.
Right.
Yeah, so I'd recommend that.
I have been to Dublin a few times, but I can't say it tastes much difference, to be honest. It's
okay, just, fair enough.
But right, so Paul's World, what have we got going on? What have you been doing? It's been ages since our last recording.
Yeah.
Talk to Chris.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we recorded too close together, and then so even though it might not be that long on the video, on the release schedule, it's been ages since we've recorded.
Yeah. So I've been painting to the next project. I finished off the Bretonians in both forms, in the Teutonic Knights and Bretonian, uniques, let's call them that, to play a game against Jim, and that's the main topic of tonight. Then I painted, I didn't need to do the whole faction, the whole, every model in it, but I painted two. I played Eric today at Lord of the Rings, Middle Earth strategy battle game. And I did a Black Numenorean list, so I had to do some more models for them, but they're so easy to paint, honestly. Like, they're Black Numenorean, so they're metal and black cloth. That's all they are. And and with the evil look for what I've done for Middle Earth, I don't eat after inking it. I don't even do anything else to it. It's just like to keep a dark, evil looking force. Because in all the fluff and stuff of rings, is like, they're not colourful people. They're just not. They're just like black and silver, and that's it. So I did that. And now I'm painting. So my next game is this game of Epic. So I'm getting that done, and that won't take long. And then I will move on to your Black Powder stuff.
Mm-hmm. Napoleonics. That's where we're going. So yeah, you have played a game, though, of that, haven't you? You played a game of Black Powder.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of, there's a little bit toe pokes, whatever the word is. Into our main topic. It was like, Black Powder is a successor game to War.
Definitely. So,
one of the things I'm interested in is the role of the general, because I've read the book, but I haven't played the game. There is no general in the game, is there?
So
he doesn't do anything apart from give a reroll.
Yeah, that's all he does. Yeah.
Which is interesting, because that's one of the great conundrums about War Master, isn't it? How important the general is. Well, they've just done away with the general.
I know you still have characters.
You have characters, and the characters you can buy different command levels.
Yeah.
But the general, all he does is provide a reroll.
So you decide which of... Yeah, okay, so let's start at the beginning. Black Powder is written by Rick Priestley, and it's a Warlord game.
And Jervis Johnson. I have to keep saying that, because you keep... Big lad.
All right, okay.
He's a good lad.
Yeah, okay, so those two... it's had its second edition recently, and this is what the main rulebook looks like, and it's very fancy, and that's I think less than that is over a year old now.
Just a quick fun fact, I was watching a video on YouTube, you may have seen the same video. Mm-hmm. And the owner of Warlord Games, apparently Rick just gave him that game,
right?
For a curry. He obviously must have got a job or something out of it, because he said, "Do you want this Black Powder game?" And he bought him a curry, and that was the job done. So what a world we're living in! This game's pretty good, from what I can see.
Yeah. So what it takes is it takes, okay. Black Powder is the age of muskets. So that is where the predominant weapon is a weapon that fires black powder. So that's a whole range of history, like it stretches to and from. Because there's a lot of history that use muskets.
You go back to 1300s, I would have thought.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's a game system for use of that, and styled at 28mm scale. But there is literally, with a little adaptation, there's nothing stopping it being played at other scales at all. It's it's quite an open rule set in that sense.
Yeah, I think all they talk about is half the movement distances and half the ranges of like range weapons, and that's it.
Exactly. So what it takes is its premise is that it takes the command of War Master, in that you have commanders with a command value, and they roll and they modifiers for what you want to do, and you roll the dice to achieve it. It's a little different in the sense that so if you're ordering the smallest unit in the game is a battalion, or a regiment, if it depending on your flavor, and that has a fixed size. So you don't remove casualties models off the unit. So there's your units do change formation, and that's why you couldn't fix them to a permanent like base. You need components to like change the units from line into square, that kind of thing. But you don't remove stands off them. The game doesn't represent that.
No, but one interesting thing is they have four different sizes of units. So you've got from, if you're doing a 40 by 20, you go from 1 40 by 20 all the way to 4 40 by 20s.
So you have to, it gives you recommendations on because it's quite mature in that sense that it knows that the game's made by Warlord miniatures, but it knows that not everybody is going to play the game with Warlord miniatures. And some scales are different than others. And it's like, all that's important is that you define what is the size of a standard unit, and then how do you break it down into bigger and smaller units. And you obviously have to agree with your opponent. You have to come to the same conclusion, otherwise it doesn't work. And that's it. That's the only thing you have to agree about. And with the orders phase, so you take Warmaster premise in that, this commander is average, he's 8, he's going to try an order. But when you declare the orders, you have to say, you can say up to 3 things they're going to do, and it defines what they can do. So they can make a move, that's one. They can change formation, that's another order. They can do something like leave this in built up area. So they're gonna deploy out of it, move, and or change line, move. So that's my 3 orders. You declare it and you roll the dice. And depending on how well you pass it is how, if they get those 3 moves off. So if you rolled well and you rolled low, and you've got 2 less than you needed as the base roll, then you've achieved 3 orders. So this unit leaves the village, forms line, advances. Firing is automatic.
What if they fail or they only do...
If you roll too high and you don't achieve anything, then some units, because they're elite, will get to do 1 order regardless. But if you fail, essentially you don't move. But what's quite interesting about it is that it's stating, and you have to, and this is the only thing about Black Powder is you have to, again, it's basically a gentleman's game. It's like, it makes no pretense at like thinking women would play this. It's like, literally it says it's a game for gentlemen with moustaches and brandy. And it's like, it actually says this fucking stuff. You then have to carry out what you stated to do. If you realize it was wrong, and it's like, actually, I didn't really want to do that, you have to do it. The rules of the game.
So I've just got to cut in here because I was talking to Gary. Who lent me some photograph today. Mm-hmm. And have you seen Charge of the Light Brigade?
Yeah.
Bill, he sent me this video clip of the officers at the end trying to blame each other. Yeah. They're like, you sir, no, me sir, no. Yeah. He's like, I followed my orders, sir, orders of a superior officer, sir.
Yeah, literally.
I imagine and say, you realise you've made a mistake, but I've said I'm going to do it now, so I've got to do it.
And it's basically it's a lovely concept behind it in terms of that the other systems of Napoleonics, and it is designed to play, but you can play other things, but it's designed for Napoleonics, just weren't good, basically. The games took way too long and nothing interesting happened. And this is just a way of getting it going. And it does play very quickly. You'll be surprised, Barry. I mean, honestly, like this little baggy here of stuff, we're going to need some more stuff because, we'll smash through that in half an hour.
Yeah, I've heard that even a reasonable sized game only takes like an hour.
No, it does not take long because
that's good. More games.
It's good. Yeah, it's good. Exactly. More you want to play a game that finishes. But I do like the blunder rule. It's the same. It's a double six. If you roll a double six, you blunder. But the blunder table is extreme. It's like, right, okay, your unit can do literally, you roll and then I take D6 table, and the outcomes of that is that it goes forward three square, three moves, forward back three moves, left three moves, right three moves. It's like, what? And it's like, so literally you can just end up with this unit going extremely out of position. Like, not a little, it's just like, oh, it's gone to the hills now. It's like charge. It's just charge. Literally charge the light brigade. Go charge. Yeah, like I didn't want that. Yeah, but it's happened. Yeah.
But that's quite interesting, because one of the things that you find when you play a lot of Warmaster is the Blundertale's quite boring. Apart from,
yeah, it's not extreme. Yeah,
it doesn't really do anything unless you roll a quarter or six. No.
And sometimes it gives you a position that was better than failing the order. Yeah. So I quite like that. It's just like, don't roll a blunder. And, you know, so then it uses a very simple rule set in terms of, okay, the unit's then got a profile. So the average, basically, if you take your average infantry, like what's considered normal, your battalion, you know, will fire three dice, you know, at shooting. It'll have a hand-to-hand value of six dice. That's average. It'll have a morale of like four, which is average. So it means it will negate hits on a 4+. It's a saving throw, really. Read that. And its stamina for a standard unit is 3, which means it can take 3 casualties before it then starts checking. And when it does take the 3 casualties, you roll on a table, basically, that has modifiers and how badly banged up it is. And that table can result in anything from ignore that, don't worry about it, to you're dead now. You know, like, and, you know, so, and then there's the big modifiers that come, that is like, if cavalry get hold of you and you're not in square, it's like, it's almost impossible for them to lose, that kind of thing. Yeah, but equally they can't. So it plays off some really core tenets in that infantry attack in line, you know, like shoot in line, go in mass and column. They form square if cavalry come near them. They don't have a choice. They form square. You know, cavalry can charge squares, but the chances are that they won't win. You know, it's even the heavy cavalry, and there are different types of cavalry. I have learned reading through these books, and I have to say the source books are really good, because they're obviously based in history, and you know, like Osprey and like is publishing is a big deal with them, and you know, the different types of cavalry, like your light cavalry is not going to break a square, your heavy cavalry might, but probably won't, you know. And then there's basically light, medium, medium and heavy cavalry, and then that's your premise, and then it gives you a bit like in Napoleonic, so in the book that we'll be using, you know, say I guess you're going to use Albion Triumphant One.
Yeah, that's, you know, what I've got. Yeah,
the war. So the British in that are really quite good. British infantry, they have their own unique rules. France have their own unique rules as well. Like, they're good at massing guys together in the pas de charge, so they have columns coming at you. It's a classic column of French versus the line of British infantry. If one of us was stupid enough to take Spanish, they're terrible. You know, like, they just all over the place with, like, they're just subpar. And then the Portuguese are basically a copy of the British, except they just don't have any decent cavalry. They barely have any cavalry, because that's historically, they just didn't have any cavalry. You know, so the main tactic of the game is you're mostly going to have infantry. When it comes against cavalry, it forms squares, and then you use cannons to shoot the squares. And that is essentially the tactics in a very general sense. That was the tactics of Napoleonics.
Well. Good stuff.
Yeah, I played a game of it, and considering we were learning the system, when I say people were playing it are like experienced war gamers, you just smash them through it in no time. You know, even looking things up in the book, it's like, this doesn't take very long to do. What it does do, and as I said, we've said on previous like podcasts, is like the group I'm with, like the group in the club who wanted to take it, or like obviously take it on 28 mil. It's not expensive at 28 mil, but it's the wrong scale. It definitely is a 10 mil game system, or you know, it's because then you can get probably the epicness of it. And that all me and Barry have had to agree on is, okay, we're going to use Warmaster bases. How many bases is the standard? Like, as I said, I would have said three, you know, because yeah. then. then two is a small, one is tiny, four is large, and I need to know what large is, because I will put large French battalions against you, because that only benefit, that's what French should do. It's like, I need big columns, so when they do hit your line, they've got more of a chance of winning, you know, breaking you.
And also, they're really, really, really good targets for cannons.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what you take. That's the tactic. Like the French, like every army has its unique rules, and that like steers you to what how you should play that faction. So if you know, with the French, because that's what I've chosen, like they got more modifiers, like they're better in those columns, basically. Then you can't even form columns as British. It's not even an option you can do.
But it's not about you just go forward. You're easier to order in columns, and you move faster and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think that playing a game or two of it and seeing a game or two, it's like, okay, so you actually don't, like, unless you were deploying heavy cavalry. You actually only want light units, small units of light cavalry, because they're there to force a change in the infantry. Yeah, which is automatic. Like, infantry have no choice. If the cavalry come clear, they form square. And the smallest unit of cavalry can do that as well as the biggest unit of cavalry. So,
rounding up the sheep, then you can let the cannons on them.
Well, yeah, literally. And for cavalry to take on other cavalry to stop that happening to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one thing you said was that it's inexpensive at 28 mil, which it is, but as long as you're not including time, because to paint 28 mil armies, this kind of size of army is just nuts, mate.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like
I ain't got that amount of life left.
Yeah, no, like Rid could do it, but none of the others are going to finish painting their stuff. Yeah, really. I think, it's just
I mean, I need a quick paint. I only can do like an hour a day at best because of my eyes and stuff. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the week's holiday, I painted nine stands of English infantry, which is like all my line infantry.
Yeah. We got
a couple of stands of guards to do and some stands of cavalry and some cannon.
What did you do the bases with? Like, how did you do the bases?
What do you mean, the basing?
Well, like, basing. Did you flock them, or like, or what have you done?
Also, I have a standard routine, which is just like sand and then Vallejo earth and then dry brush and then flock. But I've run out of the Vallejo earth now, so I'm trying to find that online, but it's not easy to get, maybe.
Oh, okay. So you've gone for a two-tone effect.
So it's like earth colour, then like bleach bug, dry brush, and then flocked. So it looks pretty effective, especially with the number of miniatures on it.
Yeah. Well, if you find some more of that Vallejo paint, buy another one for me, and I'll base mine the same.
Oh, it's funny because I bought I could only find them in packs of three. Tom's gave me a pack of three, so I got.
Oh well, I'll have one then.
You can have one. And then bleach bone, and then so I can lend you some flock, and then they'll look similar, I guess.
Yeah, it's just cool. It's just like that would look cool on the table. Yeah, it's a game. It's abstract. It's like Warmaster is, in terms of the unit. The models don't represent the amount of men they actually are. You know, I was quite impressed by it, honestly. I was like, its main thing was that, like, is speed. This is quick, and it was playing. It was like, yeah, this is really fast. You know, that's cool. That's like,
well, but I think something that's going to speed it up a lot is I didn't realize you had to declare all three orders in one go.
Yeah.
Imagine if you did that in Warmaster. You say, this is what I'm doing. You get one set of dice. If you get like a nine, you do nothing. If you get, say, a six, you all three orders. It's done. Bang, done.
Yeah, no, literally. It's. I mean, you're right. That's one of its premises. It's that basically every time you order, you are actually doing three orders every time you roll the dice.
Yeah. And you've declared them. So there's no fannying around. Decide, what should I do next? Should I do this? Measure. It's all done. Bang. But hang on. What about if... Because they probably don't move the same. What about if your cavalry move 30 and you do the mad order and you can move 90? That's mad.
Yeah. It's...
Move. That's like, I've got a million miles, mate.
You got to remember...
Side of the moon and back.
Yeah, but you got to remember that the effective range of the primary weapon is not far. Like, muskets don't fire far, and that's kind of thing. You are literally you can easily outpace the shooting It's like, you know, your cavalry can be sitting well out of range and come out and with a good roll, come sweeping in and attack them before you never get a chance to shoot at them.
In fact, one thing I did see, I watched a video, they said the accuracy range for muskets is 6 inches, yeah?
No.
So over that, they start rolling negatives to hit.
Yeah, that's right. It's all right. Yeah, that's close. Yeah, 6 inches is close. That's right.
So that would mean at 10 mil, we're playing 3 inches. You've got to be within 3 inches.
I mean, that's down to us then. Like, we could literally take the measurements as not change them at all. It depends. It's like, or we can.
No, but that's what Warlord recommended. They recommend half the distances and ranges. So that means you have to get within 3 inches for them to be accurate.
Or we convert the inches into centimetres.
Well, that's even shorter, man. That's 3 centimetres.
No, not 3 centimetres, but like we do a conversion chart for it. As long as it all scales. It's like, it depends what you want to, how you want to play.
No, it just goes to show that the actual range of a musket was abysmal.
Oh, yeah, terrible. I mean, like, and, you know, if you wanted to fire, that's why, like, groups en masse together wasn't just as much to keep everybody together. It's just like, it was kind of like the accepted standard of the day was just like, well, if we group together, you could actually hit us, and that's sporting. It's like, you would like, you know, a good, if you had the nerve, you would hold your fire until they were like 30, 20, 40 yards away.
Yeah, for sure. You
know, it's like,
you can see the whites of their eyes or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, what have I been doing? Let's crack on. I've been doing my Mole Man League, which has been, it's on round two, but I had a bye, so that's good. Mm-hmm. It seems to be going all right. I'll pick it back up. I've been a bit of a weird week. Last week of the kids before they started going back to school, so there's lots of getting stuff ready for school, and then coming back off holiday, there's a lot of stuff to sort out. So that's good. It seems to be going all right. Nobody's dropped out.
Cool. Yeah. I suppose, where are all the players from?
I think there's one Australian. There's one. I think there's only one American. Well, there might be two. I think mm-hmm. definitely one. Might be two. There's a Spanish fellow who's not playing for some reason, and then the rest are UK, I think.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. What am I talking about? There's two Swedish fellas.
Yeah. Yep.
And then the rest of UK. So I mean, it's all good stuff. I mean, any way you can play the game is good.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to actually playing some physical games. I've got to be honest, because
it
doesn't look like this thing we're living through is going away anytime soon.
Nah.
But well, you just need to do it sensibly, don't you? Because as long as you're outside, most things are relatively safe. Although I did see today that poor old not that they'll care, but the Czech Republic are going on our naughty list, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah, as of 4 a.m. Saturday morning.
Quick, get back from Prague.
But it must be people going there on holiday, isn't it? Because they were in that bad a situation, but obviously they are now.
Well, I mean, with regards to who gets on the naughty list and who's off it, it just makes, it's not much sense, Barry. You know, it's like you're talking about countries with, you know, we're more dangerous than they are.
Well, that's always been the case, but just a funny story, just as you do with the old thing. My boys' football coach has been on holiday in Spain till Sunday night.
Yep.
Obviously, you can't fly back from Spain without quarantining.
Yep.
So just got a flight from Portugal.
Yeah. There you go. Got around it that way.
There you go.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, what about his quarantining thing, mate? No.
I came back from Portugal.
Yeah. Followed the letter of the law and it's not the spirit of the law, is it? Well, the letter of the law says.
Well, no, exactly. But it's like, but equally, if the government was switched on and was asking everybody who arrived, right, where have you been? What have you been up to? And they say, so you're in Portugal for 6 hours, then you've got a quarantine, haven't you?
Yeah, it's all a big game.
But no, but it's true. It's true, isn't it? It's because it's like he's not safer because he made an extra car journey.
Of course he's not safer. If anything, it's worse. Anyway, what a mad world we live in. Mm-hmm. I've been painting my black powder stuff, and I've actually got round to putting the demons on the web store today.
Fantastic.
And almost almost got the master mold working for the phase three stuff. It's, there's always one fucking, when you do these mixed molds, because the miniatures aren't the same size. If you, all the miniatures are the same size, doing master molds is relatively easy. When one of them's a massive fucking demon with wings and the other things are just regular-ish size cavalry, it's always hard to get the mold running properly. And the, it's always the things like the demon wings, because they're the biggest, most kind of, what they're like largest piece with the most ups and downs and bits and bobs on them.
So what, you've put the stuff that was on Kickstarter onto the website?
Oh, so all the stuff, that the six units that were in the Kickstarter's on the website now.
Yeah, yeah.
And the three units that are left to do are, the master mold has been done, but it's not running properly. Most of it's running, but I'm having trouble getting the demon wings running. Once you can get one or two copies of it out, then you can work towards getting a production mold running.
Oh, fantastic. So you're talking like the greater demon, the...
Cavalry.
Yeah, brilliant.
And the beasts.
Beasts, yeah.
So the beasts and the cavalry are almost, it's just the greater demon. These fucking wings. Oh, man. I hate doing wings. If anybody knows anything about miniatures, like creations of, like, actual casting up miniatures, fucking wings are a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
Well, he didn't have to have wings, did he?
Well, no, because you'd say he could just fly because of the power of, like...
Well, yeah, but, like, that's the point. But it says that in the army list. Yeah,
but people want it with wings, don't they? They got...
All right. Okay, you didn't...
I reckon
you didn't have to.
I didn't have to. You drew it with wings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, when you do finally get a model with wings, you'll know what a pain in the arse it was to get running. What a pain in the ass. Right, so next thing on my list is Cromarty Forge Nippon Rats. Have you seen this stuff?
I have seen pictures. I obviously haven't seen them in the flesh.
I'll be doing an unboxing video, and then you can have some of them to paint.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
You can have the Skaven-y looking ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, like, I mean, ninjas, I think, or something.
Have you seen Cromarty Forge's dwarves?
He's doing good works.
Mate, they look... I mean, if I didn't own a dwarf army already, that's... Yeah, I prefer them over the GW ones.
They're kind of like... it was funny, Chris said the guy working on the steam cannon or whatever looked like him in his PB.
Yeah.
he does some good works, that Cromarty Forge.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, he's clearly enjoying it, because he's been churning them out quite fast.
Okay, and then next up, I've just got to share, we had a communication from a fella, Rusty Wise, which I thought was like a pseudonym, but it might be his real name, an email, and he shared me, his wife had painted a Tomb Kings army, and he shared me some pictures of it. So,
okay.
As we're able to share stuff now, I might as well do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you see those?
I can. Oh, wow. So, that's lovely. Yeah.
I don't know what the pyramid is. So for those who are listening at the podcast, sorry, but we're basically looking at a Tomb King army now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit of an unusual build.
Two, three, four, five. Is it 2,000 points?
It must be around that, because he's got... it's his wife. So she's got two chariots, three... horsemen. We've got a million infantry, haven't we? You got one.
No, it's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's only 10 units. I don't think that's 2,000 points.
You don't think that? You only think that's 10 units? One, two.
But count the banners.
I'm looking at this. Is that even enough?
No, I don't think it is. Well, no, four of each. Yeah, it is legal, but I don't.
Okay.
There's two sphinxes. Is that a bone giant on the end? Like
on the left,
the unique model,
yeah, I think so. And then we got one carrion, we got some spear chuckers, but no skull chuckers,
but
no skull chuckers.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it does. Let's have a look at some other pictures while we're here.
Has he got any close up pictures?
Well, closer, maybe that's his
lovely, it could be.
Oh no, maybe the general's off on the right corner,
on the right, yeah. That's cool. Yeah, that's another unit of archers at the front. It's lovely.
Yeah, so there's just something they sent us. Oh well, maybe I'll stick on because we're talking tonight. So we've got Yeah, a nice 2,000 point ish. I'm sure you could make it 2,000 points because you can barrel up on magic items and stuff. Even
yeah, exactly. And there's a dragon in the back there. Yeah.
And the sphinxes and the, if that's a bone giant between them, that's about 400 points, isn't it? Two sphinxes.
Yeah.
And bone giant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So thanks for sharing that, Mr. Rusty Wise. And a very nice pyramid in the background.
Yeah, I like the pyramid. Bit unique scenery with everything. Perfect.
Good stuff. So if anybody does take advantage of the fact we're doing Zoom calls, if anybody does have anything they want to send in, then maybe show it on air.
Yeah, be our guest.
And now we're on to the final and the most important topic of the day. You played a game of Medieval, which again is a next generation of War Master, isn't it?
Yeah, so I played, I'll just grab the book so everyone can see what I'm talking about.
The most expensive book of the set, this one.
Was it?
If you could actually find one.
Yeah, War Master Medieval.
That doesn't look like an original one to me.
No, it's not. So what you have is a game system. There was Ancients first, and then Ancients Armies, and then War Master Medieval Armies. That takes War Master Ancients and puts it forward in history. And it says you can play Medieval versus Ancients, but I don't think you... I think that would be a bit one-sided if you did.
Hang on. Have we got cannons?
Yes, yeah.
Cannons and heavy cavalry, short-based?
Yeah. Eat that, ghouls. So this is the long promised game which I painted. I wanted to blue them anyway, but I painted the Bretonians especially for. So this is a game of medieval armies. And talking to Jim about it afterwards, essentially, you could really subdivide medieval armies, the book, into two sides of it. Basically, the armies that have knights which are 4+ armor, which came later, and the knights that have the armor that is saved is 5+, and they came earlier. So, and I think you probably wouldn't want to play the 4+ versus the 5+ armies.
Is there no difference in points? There must be difference in points.
Yes, there is. But in terms of effectiveness, it's like the 4+ better than 5. I mean, there's an awful lot of army lists. Like, there's fucking shitloads. Yeah, like, so even subdividing the book in between two gives you more factions in a game system that is normal, really.
Yeah.
Like, there's even more lists, I'm sure, on, you know, Priestley's own website and stuff like that.
So tell me, what points do we play at?
So me and Jim played this at 2,000 points.
Ooh.
And it did not seem too many points. It was around about the same amount of models as a game of War Master Revolution.
So we're not talking about Ancients, because Ancients are cheap as chips.
Yeah, so Ancients, Ancients, I've not played a game that was bigger than 1,250, but in Ancients you have people running around without anything on, and
20 point units and stuff.
Yeah, and you can get 20. Obviously, there are 20 point units in this,
right?
But in Ancients, 20 point units are far more common. Like the elite is not much better. So in this, you have knights, and when a unit of knights is, say, it's 135 points.
Yeah,
because they've got unique rules. They start eating up your point value. So 2,000 points seems to be about right for this.
Right.
So basically, an army list times by two. Yeah, like an army roster. It is Ancients, so all the rules of Ancients are in there, except with two important differences.
Skirmish rules still in this, then?
But, well, let me explain. So the army book is unique in a sense that it's all the army lists first, and then Medieval Siege. So if you were playing a siege game, there's 20 pages of Medieval Siege, you know, take it or leave it. And then the last couple of pages are actually what I would say the most important thing, which are the optional, like, you know, things for Medieval, which,
right,
you would play if you like.
So just so people understand, War Master Ancients
yep
was an effective second generation
Yes, yeah. Which
then Alish reported back into Warmaster to make revelations.
Yeah, and probably did the majority of the stuff that Priestley probably wanted to do. Yeah,
he had talked about that's where he would have gone in a,
that's where
he, but he never got around to doing it.
He moved on, the company moved on. So this was the last like GW publication of Warmaster, was Ancients. We have these pages called Medieval Adaptations. So it gives you some flavor text, basically medieval army, Western medieval armies, of which most of these are, fought in a way that the army was formed into three battles. So you would have the vanguard battle, the guys who scouted first, the center battle, the main army, basically, and then the rearguard battle. And a commander would... you would have three commanders of each of those sections. And they deploy traditionally, the vanguard would be on the left, the center in the center, and the rear guard on the right. Just how medieval armies did their thing.
What, so your vanguard fought the rear guard?
Traditionally,
if you deploy that way and then I deploy that way, then we're going to be... our stuff's going to be facing opposite, so our vanguards are not going to be facing each other.
Yeah. In reality, the vanguards probably scrapped just solely amongst themselves before the main battle, anyway. In this game system, a battle is an uber brigade. Basically, it has to be at least 250 points worth of troops. And there's no upper limit then of how many stuff you do put into it, just the minimum. And that battle is deployed together, touching, and can be ordered as a brigade the entire lot. So basically, your army is three brigades.
Wow.
That's it. Three brigades. And it gives you an example there. This is your army. 1, 2, 3. Commanders aren't unique to those battles. But you can't mix the battles. So once the game's underway, you can't have Gus stuff from the vanguard battle intermingled with the center battle and being ordered together.
So I think for clarity, if we stop calling it battles and call them brigades, so you've got three brigades.
Yeah. Yeah. You've
got a vanguard brigade, a main battle brigade, and then a rear guard brigade.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and your main brigade, say your two vanguard brigades are 250 points each.
Yep.
And then your main brigade's going to be, 1,000 points? And then you've got your characters.
It doesn't count characters, but yeah.
Oh, my God. All right, so 1,500 points in the main. And that 1,500 points orders as a single brigade?
Yep.
All the time? Does it have to be
touching? No. So it has to be touching, but it's your choice. You can order it. So you can order subparts of it, by all means, but you can order it all together if you want to.
So once it starts breaking up, then you've got to
Friendly.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And that's that, basically. So you can't mix and mash those battles. So that's one rule. There's only two adaptations.
That's interesting. So everybody's Skaven for a while.
And it also, the battle, deep formations basically take less drive backs, that kind of thing. So then you have reactive moves.
What do you mean deep formations? So if I've got support, I don't get driven back as far?
Well, if your like battle is more than, it's less drive back. I'm just looking at it here. Basically, driving you back has less effect, essentially. If the unit would normally count as supported in combat, then its driven back distance is reduced by 1 centimeter for each support from a different unit. Supports are worked out exactly the same in combat. So basically, your one unit your unit has four supporting positions, three behind and one to the flank. You take four off the distance you are driven back.
But it could have five supporting positions, couldn't it?
So you could do. Yeah.
So you could lose five of the six.
Yeah, so say I've rolled, okay, I've driven you back 1d6, I've rolled a 3, you're supported by 5, you don't get driven back. But you can still be confused.
On a six. And if you have driven back more than 6, then obviously, yeah.
You do move, yeah, yeah. So what it says is like the mass of troops absorbs basically more, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's such you get, because one irritating thing, if you're in brigade, is even a single 1 centimeter pushback can cause havoc in a brigade.
Yeah, yeah, it's right. And this basically makes it when you're together, you're harder to move about.
Yeah, if you're on your own, you still get pushed back that 1 centimeter. But if you were supported, right, you wouldn't worry about it, because there's a million men behind me pushing forward.
Yeah, exactly. And if you are unfortunate enough to be hit by more than your distance you can move, you still get destroyed. So once you say it's a unit of infantry, if the total rolled is 21, you know, you're gone.
You're getting 21 support, man. How big's this bloody unit?
No, but you don't. What I'm saying is, you don't knock it down to then.
Oh, it doesn't take off. Yeah, it doesn't take the 5 support off. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yep. So, there's 3 rules. There's the battles, supporting stands and drive backs.
I like that one, the second one. I like that.
And reactive moves. So basically, this, when your unit is charged.
Nice. I'm liking this already.
You get a reactive move.
Yes.
So that's an order that you need to pass, which is given from the closest character. And you can either evade, run away, or you can countercharge. And if you fail the order, you don't do anything.
Yeah. Right.
So what this basically means is, in Ancients, skirmishing cavalry can automatically gets away. In Medieval, it doesn't. If you fail the order to get away, you don't get away. And it gives you modifiers. So skirmishing cavalry trying to get away gets a buff, but it's not automatic. And it's similar, like knights and fanatics who want to countercharge get a buff to doing that.
But what's the bonus for countercharging? The bonus for evading is evading. So that's pretty straightforward. But the bonus for countercharging, what do I get?
You count as charging.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So your units... So this happened in mine and Jim's game, is that they're predominantly knight armies. This unit of knights charged that unit of knights. He passes his counter order. He pounces his reactive move to countercharge. They actually meet in the equal distance to each other and charge each other, like lance on like full tilt.
Yeah, that's epic, man. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. They're just like, we're being charged, charge them. Yeah,
because no game's perfect. No game's perfect.
Yeah,
it has to have some kind of abstract nature and blah, blah, blah. And you have to kind of dumb things down. But the fact that there are no reactions to being charged in Warmaster is a bit irritating. So.
Well, and this gives reactions in Medieval.
So you can see that over whatever. What date was this? Because the original game is 2000. So what date is Medieval?
Looking.
Because I think it's even come after the Lord of the Rings box game, I think this is the line. It'll be at the front.
Not in my copy.
All right. Okay. I'll look it up while you're talking.
Yeah, sorry, it doesn't. I don't think it has the... It's normally on the inside cover, isn't it? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Publication. I don't have that because this isn't a published book.
Oh, sure it is, sir. I'm sure it is. 2008.
There you go, 2008. Yeah,
8 years of gameplay before this.
So it gives reactive moves. It gives stipulations. So like, who can react to who? Like pikes can't evade as a reactive move because knights can't do that because they wouldn't do that. Skirmishing units are not allowed to countercharge because they're not combat troops.
They wouldn't do that.
they wouldn't do that. Artillery, war wagons, they can't react because they can't react. You're not going to have a unit of cannons countercharging.
No.
A lot of sensible amendments, as in like exceptions. But essentially, you pass the test, and if say you're going to countercharge, it's cool. It looks cool on the table. It's like you're your knights then meet in the in between and smash into each other. And with the unique arm, with the unique unit type rules, like knights get, as well as basing the way they are, which is standard in Warmaster, you know, like anyway, they get basically a extra plus one dice each the first round of combat of the first combat they fight in the game, which basically shows they're fresh. So the first time they fight, so your unit of three, it's three hit, three attack knights, charges for four, has the knight bonus for five. Boom. Five dice each. If they, if they're elite, elite knights, so my brother knights, they have four attacks basic. They have one for charging, five. They have knight rule, six dice each. Boom.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How many points are they? How many points? They must be like 50 or something.
Yeah, around that. Yeah, my 145. Yeah, that's as good as, that's like, that's elite knights. That's like, yeah. And
but I guess there's no magic.
No magic. Yeah, artillery, there's rules for cannons, but it's not as open as artillery is. It's like, yeah, they're not dwarf cannons, basically. They've got shorter range. They've got the rule slow, which means they can't move and fire. They have extra penalties for trying to move, basically. And they've got a 45-degree angle of fire. They can't stand and fire. So they're like, they're cannons, but they're not like...
How many... Hang on. He cannons. Sounds like he's nerfed the living shit out of these cannons. How many points are these?
Okay, well, let's take the Polish list, which has cannon. Yeah. They are 50 points for two stars. Oh, right, okay. For two, so then,
yeah, that almost half price then, almost half price.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But one thing we need to mention, if you want to get this, I actually looked on eBay while I was there, and you can get like the Ancients book for about 50 quid, and you get the Ancients armies for about 75 quid, which is
what?
That's how much they cost, man. But the medieval book isn't even on sale on eBay at the moment.
Oh, yeah, but you just get a PDF.
You just get a PDF is what you need to do.
List. Yeah, but even a simple, like you can, there's loads of that on. Like,
just read it on your phone or whatever. You don't need to. You don't need to spend £1 million on a book.
That's no. Just download it and print it in whatever format you're going to print it. Yeah. Like, don't spend money.
What? Right. Well, you can spend money. I've bought the other books because I didn't pay anything like that money. I don't mind spending. I'll happily spend £20 on a book.
Yeah.
Okay. I ain't spending unlimited pounds on a book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, would you recommend playing this game?
Yeah. So, I had one game of it. Yeah. And it was my Teutonic Order versus their traditional enemy in history, which was the Poles, the Polish-Lithuanian League, which basically my Teutonic Order was a crusade against parts of Europe. Poland. Yeah.
Like, I'll tell you one thing I didn't realise is how many times Poland's been swallowed up whole and disappeared and then a year, 100 years. Poland have had it rough, man, over the years, haven't they?
They have, yeah, basically.
They have. You get swallowed up. It's rubbish being based in Europe. You want to be off on the sides, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch from the edges.
I mean, it was, yeah, it was good. It was, what I thought it did was like your terrible infantry, which counts towards your break, is so terrible that it's like, that it's like you can't even risk them fighting, which like in history, they really didn't use these, like, as in they turned up, but they were like not fit to fight, you know, like so
everybody's a goblin. Yeah, everybody's a goblin apart from
they make goblins look good, you know, like so in this Teutonic list, it has, you know, its main thing is crusader knights and then brother knights, and they're like basically elite crusaders, and it's like they're 135 points, 145 points, you know. And they actually had to amend brother knights down because they were too OP, you know. It's like in the original, like point army list, so it hadn't make an amendment for them especially. But then you're in, you know, basically local infantry, you know, like basically peasants, you know, like picking up, like, you know, farm implements, they're two attacks, no three hits, no armor, that's it.
What?
Yeah. Like, what? They're just the total chaff.
Count for break.
And you just
can't expose these fellas.
No, they won't do anything. And it's like
they're worse than skeletons, man.
Yeah. Like, and they're 20 points, you know, a unit. It's like they're terrible. Like, you can't, like, oh, their best role is supporting somebody else fighting, not them fighting as well. Not them. They're terrible. It's just like they are shit. I mean, my vanguard was some two units of light cavalry, it was my rear guard was two units of light cavalry and all my crap infantry, and I was just like, it can't fight, basically. Like, Jim attacks this and gets stuck, and I can't stop him attacking it. That's how he wins the game, is by putting to the sword all my peasants. But you've got to have some peasants, because then you can, like, fight with the knights, and you've got to fight all the knights first before you can, like,
do we not have, like, foot squires or anything?
Yeah, you do. You do have, like, men-at-arms and, like, you know, professional soldiers, but they are like, they're not going to be five up armor, they're like six up. There's some really cool unique rules, like, so my, in this list I played, it's like trained infantry was crossbows and spearmen, and they had a thing called combined formation where the crossbows set up on the game are behind the spearmen, but they can fire through them because it represents them working together. So my missile troops aren't exposed actually to melee. You know, they support the infantry, they shoot through the infantry, and crossbows, if they stand still, they've got armor piercing. So it's like, okay, that's a pretty nice formation.
In reality, what would have happened is they'd have shot and then just jumped through the back.
Yeah, and I think that's really what it represents, is the missile troops will disappear when it's time for melee. And that's cool. That's how it does that. There's a lot in this book. There's a lot that, ooh, that would be really interesting in Warmaster Revolution. Obviously, you need to play a lot more games of it, like, to work out, okay, what would you suggest? Like, everything in there is obviously, it's a man, you know, like, it's a, you know, there's no, it's historical, so it's all humans. But it's cool. I did like it. It was a good game system. I prefer the zaniness of fantasy. I like fantasy. In terms of, like, right, this is a high elf, this is a dwarf, they're different things. But there's some really good ideas in that game system, which you can see developed on further. Like, the counter charging not only played well, it looked good. Like, it's like, oh yeah, this is like, and with your, as long as you're gonna, like, right, it's like you didn't have to worry too much about getting the charge.
Exactly.
Because I'm like, I'm gonna shove my knights forward, I'm gonna try to charge. If I fail that order, as long as I keep my characters close, I've got a fairly good chance of charging.
That takes away a lot of shenaniganry about the charging, doesn't it? Because if you meet head to head in the middle, then you kind of, all the shenaniganry around moving stands is kind of taken care of, because they're hitting head to head.
Yeah, like full tilt. So what happened, example of my game is, so Jim deployed six units of knights on his right, opposite them, I put two units of light cavalry, and two units of my elite units, my brother knights, where all my majority of my knights went in the middle, but then my two elite units went on my left. And they played up against six units of other knights. Jim redeployed two of them, so he had four units of knights, and he had skirmisher cavalry as well. The skirmishers kind of nullified each other by attacking each other. Jim came out on top, his stuff, he had one stand of each alive, but they basically smashed each other apart. So my brother knights squared off against twice their number of regular Polish knights. My brother knights are slightly better, and I was like, right, okay, there's only one tactic, and that's charge. And when I I got the order off, and my first unit goes in, you only react with the primary unit. So basically, I'm going to attack the left flank of his line of four knights. The unit I'm charging reacts. It countercharges. It comes out of that line and smashes into each other. Then you move the next thing. So then suddenly the targets change. So if you're going on initiative starts becoming a little different. Like, so when my main body of knights attack Jim's mass, I failed to attack. So one of my unit knights countercharged his, and then that became the initiative target for lots of other things, because then it was the closest thing. So it was like a bit of back and forth. Like, right, it's like, so okay, he's going to charge me, I countercharge, got it off. End comes my unit of Crusader knights, slams his knights. You know, now that unit of Crusader knights now in front of my line is now the initiative target, and that started getting attacked.
Yeah.
And then if he doesn't want to do that on initiative, he has to get an order off to go past it. And if you get within 10 centimeters of another unit and then you charge, like, that's when you pass the order, they can't react, you're too close. Yeah, so
that's also you're taking negatives to do that.
So there's a tactic there of like actually getting really close so he can't react if you're willing to risk it.
Bit of risk, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like
but then you can't react if you fail and
exactly.
On the initiative charge, you can't react.
It's gonna come back on you. I can't say like, oh, army lists in medieval armies are all dramatically different because I've only played the one game of it. But like we looked through it and I was like, and we did decide that you would want to keep the knights, which are the, you know, the same saving throw would be probably best, you know, and because, you know, most of the army lists are done as a pair. So like in this bit of history, these two forces fought against each other, and I don't think they're scaled against each other, but it'd be best if they fought their historical opponents. And that's why we chose to do Teutonic and Poles, because those two fought each other. Though of course, on a game day, you know, if you wanted to do it as a tournament, have at you. Like, you'll have some situations where armies kept even by hundreds of years will like scrap against each other. It was good. Yeah, it didn't take too long. Once the story of the game was, Jim's cannons were on his right. They needed to, I realized, because they were slow, they can't redeploy and shoot at the same time, and they don't have a full 180 angle, so I didn't let them, you know, didn't let them shoot it much. I used some light cavalry to like be their targets, but they weren't dominating. But equally, opposite them was all my terrible infantry, who I soon realized I could get nothing out of, you know. The game came down to my brother knights overperforming, and my two units took on and pretty much beat Jim's four units of Polish knights. So they did well there. Well, one unit especially basically just would not lose, because God was with me. My center, so my five units of Crusader knights hit Jim's, like, you know, hit Jim's main body, and once I cut through his outer crust of like proper infantry, I was in amongst his peasants, and that was game over. I would slaughter them so quickly that it would break Jim very fast, and we called it there.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. sounds like another thing to put on the list of things to try.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, the beauty of it is. Obviously, it's medieval. The miniatures are all readily available. You know, by only changing one or two things, my army list, which is Teutonic, can go a few X years earlier and be Kingdom of Jerusalem. You know, army list, which is basically the Crusaders like in Jerusalem. You know, and defending Jerusalem. You know, that's by literally only changing a few things. And, you know, what I would need for that list is I would put down some foot knights, you know, knights off horses, basically.
And of course, it's a War Master army as well, importantly.
Yeah. And, you know...
As Bretonian.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what's interesting is, if for us, is that you would like to play a game of it, Barry, is then, do any of these ideas, do you see them life in Revolution, for example, at some point in the future? Reactive moves is a big thing, and it, in this small, microcosm of mostly Western medieval armies, it works really well. Could it work in a fantasy setting? I don't know. I mean, it might make things like your command 10 high elves a bit even better, because they'll just pass their orders, won't they?
You can't even charge the buggers.
Well, you'll charge them. You'll charge them, and they'll charge you, because
I don't think you could have leadership 10 in that kind of scenario.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what did speed up the game, I think, a lot was obviously the battles rule, and also the Teutonic Order's unique rule. So every army has a unique upgrade to its general, which allows a certain thing. And the Teutonic Order, it's basically you're a grandmaster, so ex-grandmaster certain so-and-so who was somebody in history. And his unique thing is he gives all his commanders, everybody, command 10 on the first turn. So it's like basically, and there's so in the first turn, I could pass, I got everybody one order, and I could also do elements two orders on eights. And it was like, it really got my army up the table. I mean, Jim didn't leave his deployment zone much, really. Like, I was all my, because he was going to he had cannons and I can't take them. So even though his range is not massive, he still had range. And I was like, there's only one way forward, and that's the charge. And most of the game was fought on his baseline, in his deployment zone. I was in there. I did have first turn as well, so I started off going forward, and I just kept the initiative like rolling in. Yeah. So eventually, I won when I cut through to his peasants, and he had Jim had 8 units of peasants. He had loads of them.
Oh,
Like, you can't dare let them fight. They're just there.
Baggage train. So the main aim of this episode was to talk about the different ways that War Master has affected, further games. So you've got your Ancients, you've got your Medieval.
Yep.
You've got that game that I played. What was that other game? Oh, the Lord of the Rings game, the Battle of the Five Armies.
Yeah,
which is, whenever I read that or play that, I think, this is quite interesting.
Yeah.
So you see that, things he thought about doing things in a different way, and then finally now we've got Black Powder, which again is a variation of Warbuster.
But I mean, exactly. Like, I mean, the first version of Black Powder was 2010. It was done, so it's been, and the second version of Black Powder, I'm told, isn't dramatically different. But it's at its core, it's Warmaster is a mechanism for moving a mass battle game around. Well, it doesn't take that much to make it work for Napoleonics.
I think there was a game, Hail Caesar, came before this that spawned Black Powder. So basically we wanted to talk about all the different games that are there, and now they've got quite a lot of similarities. And if you enjoy the kind of risk reward of rolling command dice and failing command dice and getting out of the shit when you failed your command dice. You like this kind of game. So if you don't enjoy rolling dice, then maybe War Master isn't your bag, and you like your Age of Sigmar, where shit just does what it's told. So anyway, well, that's probably us done for tonight. So we've gone over an hour. So if you want to get to us, you can hit us on the Facebook page. That's where everything goes on, really, your old face ache. Or you can warmaster.podcast@googlemail.com, as our friend Rusty Wise did this time. And hopefully we'll get back in a week or two before my 50th.
Yeah, we have this reader's question,
Do we?
Comment. Well, what you sent me was in the show notes was this whole text.
I think, is that not an old one, or is this?
Oh, is it old one?
Yeah, I think so. I'll have to read that next time. Oh, crap. I hadn't even seen that was tailored, because I copy-pasted one.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Made a copy of one, so maybe that's an old one. But I will have to check now. So anyway, sorry about that. Sorry, and yeah, so Paul, stay mm-hmm. safe. Keep yeah, doing yep. the Lord's work.
Yeah, yeah.
Running the NHS or whatever you're doing at the moment.
I've got a interview for a secondment to a higher banding. In a couple of in a week and a half's time.
Well, good luck with that, sir.
Yeah.
I don't know what the next episode's going to be, but it's going to be good, whatever it is. So this was the War Muster Podcast, episode 148 with Paul.
Oh, well, something I should say is the next event I'm running at 40K is on the 13th of September. So if you're in the area and you want to play at Colchester, a day of War Muster Revolution, that's when
it's Colchester, Essex. It's normally about a fiver or a tenner for a day.
It's a fiver, yeah.
Well, can't really get any cheaper than that, man, unless they're paying you to go.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're out and about in the world and you're not masked up, or you have to mask up still?
It's a shop, so yeah, theoretically, yeah.
Mm. Theoretically, that's what I love. That's what we got in the last one, theoretically. Right, so enjoy yourselves, and I'll see you in a few weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
From the amazing Cromedy Forge, a new range, Pictish Woodlanders, available from 10mm Wargaming.com.